Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. We're very pleased to be joined today by two authors of a new book called From Fear to Serenity with Anthony DeMello, Father Thomas Casey and Margaret Brennan Hassett. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
Now, maybe we can just start by talking about, for those people, I know Anthony DeMello is a Jesuit, Indian Jesuit, who is known for his spiritual writings by many people, but perhaps there are some of our listeners who don't know him as well. So, Father Casey, perhaps you could just begin by giving us just a basic introduction to his life.
Okay, well, when I was 20 years of age, I went to a ramshackle retreat center in the middle of Ireland, middle of nowhere, and this man from India came along, who was actually quite renowned among Jesuits, at least at that time, Tony DeMello. And he sat down on a table with his back ramrod straight without a single note beside him. And he talked for 5 to 6 hours each day. Now, that was the first and last time I've ever listened to a fellow Jesuit talk for so long without ever finding myself bored for a moment. Because by turns, he entertained us, he shocked us, he provoked us, he moved us. And you know, there was a late great Irish spiritual man, John O'Donoghue, who complained about Big Mac spirituality. You know, he felt people were being given substandard spiritual food. But there was something of real nourishment in Tony. He borrowed from Hinduism and Buddhism and Hasidic tales and psychology and Christianity and put it all together into a lot of stories, a lot of ways how to pray, simple wisdom and how to be aware.
Well, Peggy, yeah, maybe you can also add how you first were introduced to his work.
Well, for those of us of a certain age, in the 70s, Father DeMello was quite almost a cult figure. And I had every tape, every book, everything he'd ever written. And there were a whole bunch of us that followed him. He had a different approach. We were raised in a different church, a church that was much more, I'm told not to say rigid, but and this man opened it up. Light came in, and he told stories, and he brought in experiences from other traditions, from Hinduism, from Indian traditions. I mean, the world was wide open. We talked about love. We talked about stories. It was a completely different approach, and I fell in love. I had every tape. Unfortunately, they were in the trunk of a car, and when the lease was up, it went. But ever since then, been a great believer and a great follower, and he helped me into myself.
You've both mentioned some of sort of his influence, how Eastern spirituality kind of played a part in his own spirituality. Maybe you could talk about a little bit about that, how that his, you know, his upbringing in India affected his own Catholic spirituality.
Well, he was born in Goa, which is the part of India that the great Jesuit Saint Francis Xavier went to and evangelized. So, in fact, when he grew up, he wasn't really very familiar with Indian spirituality at all. It was only when he came to do some studies in Chicago, Loyola University in psychology, that people turned to him. It was the first time in his life he was studying with lay people, and that was back in the 1963, so just on the threshold, the beginning of Vatican II. But he was with people who weren't satisfied with kind of pat answers, and he felt challenged to articulate his beliefs. And then they were people also who were getting interested in Indian religions, non-Christian religions, and they were asking him about it. And he realized, gosh, I don't really know that much about my own country. So he decided, I'm going to learn more about Indian spirituality. So it really came through the States, through America, that he got in touch with his own culture, as it were.
He also brought to our way of thinking something that American Christians were not used to dealing with, and that was a story. And he had a line, I believe it said, that a story is the shortest way between truth and a human heart. It didn't require thinking. It kind of seeped down into your DNA, and it was with you all day. And that is how, I mean, he could tell story after story after story, and that is really how his spirituality came through.
Yeah, Father Jim Martin, who's written the introduction to this book, who's a member of our staff here, of course, mentions that his work as a spiritual director really shaped his spirituality and his outreach, and that, you know, he had this grounded pastoral experience. Father Casey, would you agree with that?
Yes. He started this institute in Pune in India, and it was an institute to teach people, for mature Jesuits really, to teach them who had some experience of ministry, and was helping them to take time out to learn how to integrate psychology and spirituality, because, you know, there's that famous, Peggy and I put it in the book, we say grace builds on nature, it doesn't replace nature. So if there's no nature there in the first place, there's nothing for which grace can build on. So he was trying to help people who were already out active, and perhaps often people who had been formed before Vatican II, to begin to integrate the human sciences into their spirituality. But a big change, or when he really came to international prominence, was he went to a big meeting of the Jesuits, what we call a general congregation in Rome in 1972-74. And when he was there, he was asked to lead the group in prayer. So what he did was, instead of bringing them to a quiet chapel in the house, he brought them to the noisiest room he could find, where the Roman traffic was blaring underneath. And to everyone's surprise, he managed to lead the group in prayer there. And so that really catapulted him to fame, and the invitations started pouring in from all over the world to give retreats, to give workshops, to help people in their spiritual quest.
What he did for many was get people, I had studied the Summa and, you know, all kinds of theology, was get people from their head to their heart. And we say in the book that it's 15 inches from your head to your heart. But that's the longest journey in the world. But he got people to open their hearts and turn off their heads. And that was a huge accomplishment. If your heart is open, we learn to give up judgment. And with no judgment, you know, everything was possible.
This book, Why Don't We Turn to It, From Fear to Serenity, which has just been published by Paulus Press. A lot of books published by Anthony DeMello, about Anthony DeMello. What is kind of your take? You know, how did you find your way into this subject?
Well, we really were praying together, actually.
Okay.
We started by praying together, and as we prayed together, we said, Peggy has an awful lot to offer. She's much more experience and wisdom when it comes to human life. And much more experience of spirituality. So I felt if I could get what she has, her wisdom, get some of it down on paper. And we just wanted to hook it on Tony DeMello because it's such a well-known person. Going into this is great. I mean, since I've been involved with this, I'm actually paying a lot more attention to my breathing than I ever did before. I mean, I'm discovering that I'm the most terrible breather in the world, in the sense that I don't breathe deeply at all. Things like that. But it's got us into deeper, I think, into prayer, into spirituality, not into sort of a pious kind of externalistic, legalistic thing, but into, you know, prayer as beyond babble and bargaining, but a kind of prayer as stillness, as quiet, involving scripture and a real raw encounter, but raw but tender with God.
We don't use breathing in the book as breathing to, you know, help your blood pressure, help your heart, whatever. We use it as a preparation for prayer, to bring you down, 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 so that you can be quiet and open to God. And when Tony, Father DeMello, brought these people into the noisiest place in Rome to pray, it's as we say in the book, it's spiritual judo. He used the noise to bring them into themselves. And we can do that in New York, we can do it anywhere. But the breathing is for a purpose, and it is to lead us into prayer. And silence is really what we're after here is the silence. We don't need to pray with a lot of words. Silence is very hard in this society.
You said you started, this kind of started by you praying together, but how, I mean, did you know each other prior to working on this? The Gregorian is where you teach, Father Casey, correct?
I'm a student of Father Casey's. I'm involved with the Gregorian Foundation in New York, and I became very involved, went over to Rome, walked in and said, wow, I love this place. I could go here. That was 7 years ago, and I'm still there. I'm a slow learner. But Father Casey was one of my first teachers, and we became great friends and started praying together. We had many interests in common, culture, philosophy, et cetera, but we started praying together.
Well, I should just mention that Gregorian, for those who don't know, is a major Jesuit institution, school, pontifical academy in Rome, in the Vatican. So, and Father Casey is a teacher there, and we've had some other, Michael Paul Gallagher is another teacher there who we've had on the podcast, so I should just say that. But Father Casey, perhaps you can talk a little more about, I mean, just this whole idea from fear to serenity. Maybe you can just kind of sketch that out for us, what you're trying to give to the reader.
What I'm trying to give to the reader is a real hands-on guide to prayer, interactive. Like, we've deliberately chosen a lot of different ways of prayer because we know that there's no one size fits all for everyone. So in the book, you'll find maybe 10, 12 different concrete approaches to prayer. Simple things to how to prepare for prayer. Then also essential things like getting to who is getting beyond sort of infantile images of God, God as the schoolmaster or as the absentee landlord, you know, with James Joyce and the Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, where he's sitting on the clouds, paring his fingernails, indifferent to the world below. So getting beyond those kind of childish, adolescent images of God to an image of a God who actually believes in us more than we believe in ourselves, which is quite extraordinary. Extraordinary to take in, just as Peggy was saying, it's the kind of heart knowledge that you can sort of say with your head, but to absorb in your heart is something that only happens through prayer, through that kind of heart experience, heart knowledge. So we're trying to show that way to be childlike, to recover a certain childlikeness. You know, I think the first story we tell in the book is a holy man who is very reluctant to talk about how he got to holiness, and his disciples are asking him here, there, and everywhere. And eventually one day his son manages to pry the secret from him. And he says, you know, what was it like? And he said, well, you know what it was like? He said, it was like climbing a ladder to break the window and get into the house, and then realizing that the front door had been open the whole time. So that kind of experience that you're coming back to yourself, you know, like T.S. Eliot says, the end of our journey will be to come back to where we started and know the place for the first time. But you have to go on that journey to get back to being the child. You have to go through the journey to get back to the kind of second innocence, if you like.
Right.
There's two warring selves within ourselves, we believe. And we are trying to allow the true self to come out. There's one quote in the book: to take off the mask to meet the other, to see the other masks that we meet. In other words, just the world is full of masks. Let's take ours off, and maybe it will start others. But to get to the true self within, and not the false. Who am I is a chapter in the book, and we would like to get to the true self. And I think the book helps. We say in the book, and we've gone back and forth on this, that we have to, in order to love others, we have to love ourselves. But to me, to love myself, I need God's help. In the book, we do it the other way, but that's just one of our intellectual tensions here. I need God's help to love myself.
Well, Father Casey, maybe you can talk to the audience today. You know, Father, I know Father DeMello passed away very quickly. Was it back in the 80s?
Or? 87, yeah. 87. In New York, actually, in Fordham.
Oh,
yes.
Really? He was, okay. Yes. I didn't realize that. I knew it was a heart attack. It was very sudden.
Yes.
A real loss. But what does he have to offer kind of today's Catholic, today's... I mean, I gather this isn't just written for Catholics. I mean, this is for anybody who's interested in spirituality and prayer. I mean, what do you think he can offer to somebody, you know, 20 years, 25 years later?
Yeah, what he can offer is people 25 years later are still trying to get in touch with who they are. They're still trying to get into the spiritual quest. Even the fundamental message of awareness. We Peggy and I came across a wonderful quote, which we put in the book, from George Eliot's Middlemarch, where she says, she says, of course, George Eliot, being a woman, having adopt a man's name of the 19th century Britain. But she said, if we had a keen vision and feeling of all ordinary human life, it would be like hearing the grass grow and the squirrel's heart beat, and we should die of that roar which lies on the other side of silence. As it is, the quickest of us walk about well wadded with stupidity. And we feel, you know, it's all too easy to walk about well wadded with stupidity, and it's much more difficult to be aware. And we also use the story from Edgar Allan Poe, the purloined letter, where someone hides a letter in the most obvious place in the house. And that's what we said at the beginning, you know, for example, we said that what's hidden in the most obvious fact that we breathe, we said what's hidden there is a path to health, a path to serenity. And why is it hidden? Because we don't breathe properly. His insight was, you know, that one of his core insights of de Mello was that, you know, people are born asleep, they grow up asleep, they get married asleep, and they die asleep without ever having woken up. And so this fundamental thing of awareness is still something that I think is a challenge 25, 27 years, you know, it's many after his death. The questions, the deep questions of the human spirit don't really...
It sounds like these are timeless questions.
Yes, yeah.
That's sort of what we've ignored in this little conversation is if you spoke to Father de Mello and said, how do I become enlightened? Awareness. What's awareness? Awareness. How do you spell awareness? And you'd write it in the sand. Awareness, awareness, awareness. And what is awareness? I mean, this morning I ran over to the river and it's sort of the cold wind on my face. It's sort of waking up and seeing the colors and being alive to Tom's present and my husband's in my home and being here and praying before we came that we'd be channels. I mean, it's just awareness.
Then we also have different kinds of prayer. For example, we have the classical Ignatian type of prayer of reflecting on your experience, getting in touch with, you know, rolling back your experience like you'd roll back a film, looking back over the various images of the day and getting in touch with that. We have the imaginative kind of prayer where you imagine yourself into a gospel scene. We have then the prayer where you just take a verse from scripture, if you only knew the gift of God, if you.
Me, Lord.
Am I the one? Is it for me? The gift, a gift, there is a gift. I find it hard to believe. Just taking a phrase or two phrases and letting it sink in that way that you listen to it, you absorb it, and then out of that response you come to some sort of quiet adoration and sense of fullness and presence. So we have various types of prayer that we show. As we said before, there are options, yeah. You need a menu because people are... Actually, the then Cardinal Ratzinger put it very well. He said, there is many ways to God as there are human beings, which I really like. He said that in a book of interviews a number of years ago. And so there should be that many ways of prayer.
We want to, maybe we'll end with that, but we want to thank you very much. It sounds like we could keep going on about a lot of the wisdom that Tony de Mello had to offer and continues to offer to today's seekers. So we want to thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. Remind you to look online where we have an archive of articles on the introduction of the new missal that goes along with an article by Cardinal Roger Mahoney on the new translation. Also for our liturgy and design issue, we have a slideshow featuring newly designed churches and some additional commentary from two people involved in the creation of redesigned churches. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.